Hashtag the best start to your day.
Elton Bondi, a very, very good morning to you. Thank you for speaking to us. How are you feeling, first of all?
Thanks very much, Howard. Hi, Zanati. Good morning. Thank you for having me on the show. Yeah, thank God. Feeling great. A little bit weak, but I think I'm free of the illness and well on the mend now.
Okay, were you strong beforehand? I mean, just want to get some kind of a picture.
Yeah, to be honest, you know, you'd heard stories that that this is going to get 40, 50, 60% of the population. So mentally in my mind, as early as March, I prepared my body for this. So I really put a lot of effort into getting healthy and getting strong and getting fit, certainly cardiovascularly. So when it did hit me, I think pretty good shape, and I've been preparing for it for 2-3 months.
Yeah, maybe you were over. You probably peaked too soon.
Could be.
Trust me to say that. Oh,
no,
my goodness.
I'm telling you. The answer is maybe just don't over prepare. You know what I mean? And then anyway. So Elton, I mean, we joke, but you had a terrible time. I mean, I spoke to you when I heard that you got it, and you at that stage it wasn't even as bad for you. You said to me, Howard, anybody that says that this is a normal illness is wrong. This is crazy. Tell us what you went.
Okay, so it affects different people in different ways. Some people get a few sniffles, some people get it terribly, some people, as we all know, are in ICU fighting for their lives. So it affects people in different ways. But I can tell you, I've had most of the African exotic diseases. I've had the tick bite fever and the malaria and, you know, the usual sort of stuff. I've had, I think, which is probably a world record in man flu, at least I would think it is. And so I've had a lot of different illnesses, but this is something extraordinary. It is unbelievable. It's excruciating. And then top with that, there's a huge degree of anxiety. So it started with me on the 14th. I done a little bit. It was this Sunday, the 14th. I did a bit of exercise. I came back, felt fine, and a normal little dose of exercise. Felt a little bit exhausted, but nothing worried about. Had a shower and I couldn't warm up. I was freezing. And then I got, after the shower, I went back and had another hot bath, couldn't warm up. By noon, I was shivering and shaking with myalgia pain like I've never had before. Now, we've all had the fevers and all that. This is something different. So sweating, but still freezing cold. And then around 3 o'clock of that afternoon, the headache started. And the pain is, it's indescribable. It's quite excruciating. It's as if you were lying on a very badly tarred road with your head and somebody standing in your head for the next 4 days, and there's not a lot you can do about it. You can take as many painkillers as possible. Your body is in pain, your head is in pain, and that's it. It's and a persistent cold, and it's terrible, absolutely terrible. Another thing which was interesting for me is there's the psychological element to this, because you know they did shut the world down for this. It is not a normal thing. And so you begin to worry. You really begin to worry.
I would imagine anxiety is overwhelming. The minute you get a positive result, you have to think the worst or fear the worst, especially if you're feeling so ill.
I think you do. Well, certainly I did. And the system's extraordinary. So look, you go to the numbers, you go to the stats, you see what the mortality, God forbid, the mortality rates are. You gain some comfort from that. But then there's a whole bunch of stuff that you don't know, and they still don't know. Like, is there permanent damage happening here? Mm. Is it going to recur? You know, it's too early. So you have this anxiety. But then what happens is a net closes around you very quickly. So you go through all the typical emotions. You get that the doctor phones you. It's a positive result. A bit of denial, a little bit of, and then anxiety. So there's denial at first, and then we have to deal with it, and then anxiety. But then a net closes around you. So then very quickly a medic from Hatsola comes, and they give you an oxypulsimeter, they give you a thermometer, and you start getting calls twice a day. And they give you a whole retinue of drugs that they need to get, you know, absorbic acid, it's all that. And they start tracking you, and then you give them the stats. And they do it in the morning, and they do it in the afternoon. And that call becomes quite incredible from not only knowing what's going on, but just emotionally, psychologically, that you've got this net around you. People are tracking you. You're being monitored sometime. Correct, very much. And then that's it. And then they just said they didn't like the way my stats were going, so they asked my general practitioner to pop around and take some bloods. I'm not sure who, I think I'd told, I'm really not sure who asked for those bloods, but based on my stats, they took those. They saw those were going the wrong way, and then And the professional said, no, get him into hospital. That was 2 weeks ago.
Right.
And then that's a new world. That's a new world of.
And the loneliness.
That's like a different league now when you get to hospital.
The loneliness in hospital must be terrible.
It's the loneliness, but it's not, it's the drama of it, Howard. It is. You arrive there, it's like a refugee center. There's tents. Everybody's dressed around in space suits. There is disposable stuff everywhere. People are tired. Nursing staff are tired. My understanding, it's a very layperson's understanding, but my understanding is that an ICU is the pinnacle and puts a lot of stress on the nursing system. Mm-hmm. So if you've got, I don't know, 30-40% capacity ICU used up, it puts a lot of stress in the whole hospital system. You know, these guys are sitting at 80-90%, and the only reason they're not 100% is I think that they're strategically holding back a few beds. Mm. I think. I can't.
Right,
you know.
Right.
But then they were saying that 12 or 13 nurses test positive. So that's a further strain. They're phoning from everywhere to get nurses. They can't get them in. There is no ways you're losing your tempo or getting irritated with anybody because you can see these are human beings in distress. I'm talking about the nursing staff.
Sure.
They're trying to help you. They're trying to do the best they can. You can't move from cleaning staff to everybody else. You know, everybody's trying. The professional staff, the doctors are extraordinary. They come around you like a military, with a military precision. There's very little messing around. There's very little bedside. Hi, how are you doing? How's your weekend? It's kind of like, I've got this. This is how it be. We know what we're doing. There's a lot of unknowns, but there's a lot of stuff we do know. And I'm telling you now, this is how it's going to be. And so it's very short, sharp, unbelievably professional.
Almost military.
But safe. Almost, that's exactly the way. But you feel, okay, I'm in good shape now. I'm in good hands now. It does give you a sense of
comfort,
extraordinary confidence, the way that.
And the fact is that no one in your family can visit you. No one's got access to you.
Yeah, no one's got access to you. No one can visit you. You can't even, a little bit later when I start to feel a bit better, you can't even get out to your room. So you're in this, I don't know, 3 meter by 7 meter cubicle. But for the first few days, just to get out of bed and make that 5 meters to the bathroom is an epic proportion. The physical exertion to do that and the physical pain, just to go there, lean on the wall, struggle, then be able to get back to your bed, you come back, it's like a massive psychological victory just being able to have done that. It's debilitating.
It's incredible what you actually go through on an emotional and psychological level, let alone physical, and trying to deal with that while you're physically so ill and afraid. Because now you're in hospital. Now you know that already you're a stat, that you're not one of those people who are going to get a sniffle and carry on and hardly even notice that they've had it.
Correct. But then there's something else that comes to mind. Look, the doctors, Anton said to me, a lot of it is the drugs they're giving me will cause a lot of hallucinatory effect, which they did. So you know, they give you painkillers, and there's a point at which they do nothing. And the nurse says, I'm not giving you anymore. It's actually not stupid now. You've had so much, you're not, and it does nothing. So the only thing you can do is take some very strong meds to knock you out. The trouble is now you sleep, but when you go to sleep, you get into this nightmarish world where you're in a nightmare and you're wanting to wake up and you're saying, I'll take the physical pain because this is, so you vacillate between this virtual world and this real world. Both aren't pleasant. But I tell you what does start to happen quite quickly is the mind starts to drift and you start to think how fortunate, how lucky am I, because I am in a hospital bed. So there must be hundreds, perhaps thousands of human beings right now in South Africa that are feeling precisely what I'm feeling, except a little bit different. In fact, a lot different, because they would be on the street. They would be in a shack, perhaps, or on the street without any knowledge or advice, convinced they're going to die, but experiencing the same pain I'm going through. They add to whatever they've got a massive dose of hunger. Maybe add a few children into the mix that are crying for food, and there's no ways they can even begin. You start to think a little bit like that.
You appreciate what you do have. How did your family handle it?
Champions. Really, really good. They went, my wife went super militaristic. So, you know, we had the house cleaned out and they all got tested straight away. But I think that there was a bit of anxiety. I'm a drama queen, Howard, you know me. And my son was saying.
We picked that up, Elton.
And we love a feather.
David Zimmerman saying it's enough. Elton, I'm hysterical now.
So when I wasn't SMSing and WhatsApping them saying this is it, this is the worst flu ever caught it, then my son got worried. Said, I think we need to be worried now. So they handled it well. My wife went into, as she does, into action mode, for which I'm very grateful. I think with my youngest daughter, it was interesting. I think a little bit of a stigma associated with that. I think a little bit of embarrassment.
I want to talk about the stigma. Does it exist? Because I feel that people are not talking about this, or when they are positive, because there is some form of stigma. I don't understand why, but never mind the reasons. Do you think there is a stigma?
I do. I think stigma is in some sort of mark disrespect or something. Yeah, I do. And you know what, Howard? I think there is, because it's not a normal illness. And in some cases and in some contexts, I think the stigma is appropriate. Let me explain. You know, if you're a person, as I was 3 or 4 weeks ago, such a big boy, have a brocha. Not many people, a few people come to my house, will sit socially distanced outside. You deserve to have a stigma, because I don't think you understand exactly what it is that you're doing and how you're harming people, as I was. If you're the type of person, as I was 3-4 weeks ago, that would go for a walk or a run, and I got my buff, but I don't quite put it on because it's uncomfortable and it's sort of on, a person like that, as I was, deserves to have a stigma, because you're doing stuff. And I know it's difficult for everybody, and the way we're living is not easy, to be isolated. But if you can't be respectful of these things, stay at home. And if you are going out and behaving in a way that is irresponsible, as difficult as it is, and I'm saying, people will laugh at me now because this is as I was a month ago. Mm. If you are going to walk around like that, then you deserve to. Those are the people that should have a stigma. You should have a mark of shame to walk around like that. I'm not criticizing people because I was like that and people can't know. But get ill, God forbid, go to the hospital, see what's going on. And you have to up your vigilance. And if you can't, which is understandable, stay at home. In terms of people that have got the disease, I mean, what do you want? Nobody goes out there to try and get it. Everybody's trying to avoid it. It's no different to getting, in terms of their level of responsibility, to them getting the normal flu, except it's far from the normal flu. So I think that people that have got the illness would carry a stigma. It's not necessary. And I think people that behave irresponsibly don't carry a stigma, and they ought to.
Interesting.
Sorry to be so
I think that's fair. I think that is absolutely fair. We do need to unfortunately end the conversation, and now we are running out of time. Elton, we just wish you all the best.